You tuned in to Relationship Factor, where we talk about all things relationships for millennials, moving you from a problem to solution, from functional to exceptional relationships. I'm your host, Kingsley Moyo. Hey, thanks again for downloading another episode of Relationship Factor. If we are not already connected, I hang out a lot on Instagram. Find me, the handle is Relationship Factor. Occasionally, they are dropping some relationship nuggets that'll pick you up and carry you throughout the week, and some helpful tips on how to build healthy relationships. And today for our episode, I'm joined by Dr. Elizabeth Fedrick. Dr. Elizabeth is a licensed professional counselor, and she owns a private practice in Gilbert, Arizona. She also teaches psychology courses at Grand Canyon University. In this episode, we talk about codependency, and perhaps what you thought was codependency may not be what it is, or you may be a codependent. We explore why you keep dating the same kind of people, or rather, why do people keep dating the same kind of people, including narcissists. Join me for this conversation as we talk about codependency, the disease to please, and why you keep falling for narcissists. People come into relationships for all kinds of reasons. Some people come into relationships for love. Some come into relationships for what I would call trauma bonds. Pandemic hit, money wasn't coming in the same way. So, hey, you figure, you know what, let's live together. Or maybe it was a rough time, you lost somebody, or you broke up with somebody, and it's that kind of feeling where you just want somebody to be with you in a relationship. There's yet again some people who go into relationships, and it turns out to be codependency. Codependency, that's what we're talking about today. Dr. Liz,
yes.
Talk to me. What is codependency?
Yes, great question. We have a societal misconception of what codependency is, and we often look at it as individuals who are hyper-dependent on another individual, and they are maybe someone who has to be taken care of, and they have to rely on others to really take care of them and take the lead in all of those things. Where actually codependency, a true codependent is somebody who is, they are taking care of everyone else. So they are, there's often a lot of controlling behaviors with codependency because they are caring for everyone. They're trying to control the environment. They often make other people a priority over themselves. And so often codependency is not about take care of me, but how can I best take care of you? And I hear a lot of codependents say in session, I just feel a lot better when I'm taking care of other people. I feel a lot better when I'm fixing other people's problems. And that is a red flag.
That's interesting. Yes. Because more often when we think of codependency, we're saying the person who is dependent on other individuals, they can't make it on your own and you're struggling your own. But the opposite is true. It's the one who has the savior mentality, who wants to take care and take care. That can be overwhelming.
That can be overwhelming and often leaves that codependent in a horrible position because their needs are often dismissed. They don't make them a priority, so no one else does either. And so it does become overwhelming because when I sit with people who struggle with codependency, it is not just in their romantic relationship. Often they find a career where they can take care of other people and they are on the PTO and they are volunteering and they are babysitting everyone's kids. You know, it's this whole, like their whole world is about taking care of others.
So you carry it all over. So if it's present in your relationship, it means that you're doing it in other areas as well.
Absolutely. Yes.
So then in trying to fix it only in your relationship may not only be the solution working towards it. You may need to go and look at every other area in your relationship and work towards that.
Yes. And really starting to see where it came from. And that is, you're right that the awareness of like, where is this showing up? But then also, where did this develop? And that is why it becomes across all these different it's like various contexts because often that is part of the relational programming. And so whether this child took care of their siblings in childhood, they took care of their parents' emotional needs, they took care of the household, maybe they were financially responsible. We hear this often at a very young age. You know, all of these behaviors that early on, what we call parentified. So they were put into a role that was not appropriate for a child. And that started to become their programming that not only is it my job to take care of everyone else, because I learned that very early on, but my value is derived from taking care of everyone else.
So it's like they're fixed. So if they don't do it, they feel like they're missing something. Is it thinking of examples of codependency, is this an individual who always has a list full of things to do and it never gets done and they never really get time for themselves? I hear when I talk to couples and wife or husband, sometimes more so wives, whereby they have a huge list mm-hmm. where they do a whole lot of things. At the end of the day, they're so tired, even for themselves and everything. What are some of examples of codependency? What does it look like?
That is a beautiful example right there. Often what we call this like type A, when someone comes in and tells me how type A they are in session, we very quickly start to assess for these other codependent traits, because you're right. It's the list a mile long. It's, is always having to do. So you're right, at the end of the day, they're burnt out. They don't make time for themselves, because often what I hear said is that if I make time for myself, that feels selfish. I'm not, I can't make time for myself because everyone else needs to be taken care of. And so some traits of this, as you're describing, it's this to-do list. It is not engaging in self-care. It's reporting that self-care is selfish. And it is really, like I said, the controlling aspect of it. So it's often taking care of everyone because it's this sense of then I have control over the situation.
So it's the illusion that I am in control. If I don't do any of these things, I'm losing it. I'm not in control. And so the individual begins to struggle. Now, is a codependent person a person who gets things done properly, or do they lack in, how do I put it, Liz? They're doing a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And in all the lot of things, quote unquote, they're doing, are they doing those things well, or is just half and half?
And I think that is really, I think there's a spectrum of that, because I do sit with a lot of people who have such a long list that, you're right, things either don't get finished or they don't get finished correctly. But the other, another characteristic of a codependent is perfectionism and people pleasing. And so the perfectionism piece really ensures that things are done properly. And so we really see this black and white thought process with a lot of codependents that they're either all in or they're all out. And so when they take something on, I mean, and this is where a lot of addictive behaviors, we see a lot of addiction with codependents. Because there's an attempt for the numbing and the masking of what they're really experiencing. And so whether it's work addiction, relationship addictions, and then all of, you know, substance abuse, shopping addiction, we could go on and on. But often because of that black and white thinking, that extremist mentality, which means back to your other point, that they do get things done correctly because of the perfectionism, that is right, tied in. Okay. It's really hard to find the gray area.
So they are burning themselves out and they are overwhelmed. And in order to able to get some sense of peace at the end of the day, you get some addictive behaviors in order to numb or to get some sense of relaxation. Now, we can't talk about codependency without mentioning narcissism. So what is the difference there? It seems like the idea of codependency tends to be flipped the other way around. Narcissism, how does it plug into, can a codependent person be a narcissist? How does what's the difference and how does that link in there?
Such a good question. Narcissism often comes into the equation with codependency because these two type of people are magnetic towards each other. So there are multiple similarities and multiple differences in these two different types of personalities. Some of the similarities is that the childhood or the early life experiences, there could be a lot of commonality in there. So whether it was emotional neglect experienced as a child, whether it was a lot of shaming that took place, it was the need to perform or to do something in order to get acceptance or esteem from caregivers. All of these are commonalities between a codependent and a narcissist. It just depends on how it manifests into adulthood. And so then into adulthood, as we described the codependent traits, but the narcissistic traits are that very self-absorbed, everything is about them, they can't be wrong, they need to be noticed, they need to be taken care of. The narcissist is take, 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 and the codependent is give, give, give.
So it's a good, it's like that peanut butter and jam sandwich. It's, yep. It fits well. And I'm assuming these two individuals, quote unquote, have their normal, but it's a dysfunctional kind of normal. They seem to be working fine and they need each other to feed each other.
Yes. That is really well said.
They say opposites attract. And possibly this could be the true statements of it. Now, if you are a codependent person, or maybe you are not a codependent person, there is this idea where people keep saying, you know, I keep falling for the same type of person. Like I just find myself being in the same relationship. This may or may not be a codependent or narcissist. Why do people keep falling for the same kind of people over and over again? What's happening there? What's going on?
That is such a good question. That comes up in sessions so frequently. That is what I call relational programming. So our early life experiences with our primary caregivers, when we're forming attachment, the way that we engage with our caregivers and the way that they engage with us is setting this framework of how relationships work. So that is our earliest experiences of, in order to get my needs met, this is how I have to behave, okay? And that is how we're programmed as humans from the get-go, from infancy. What do I have to do to get my needs met? And so that is exactly what's going on. And you figure out how do you go about getting your caregiver to accept you, approve of you, esteem you, whatever that is. And then those are the behaviors that you take into adulthood. And so that's where the relational programming term comes in, because you are really programmed in childhood to know how to relate. Into adulthood, we then seek out that template. We seek out what is familiar. So if you were raised by a narcissist, you are going to be seeking out, you would likely were even the codependent as a child. You were taking care of everyone as a child. You're going to seek that out into adulthood. And if you were raised by codependent parents, then that is what you're used to, and you're going to seek that out into adulthood. So that is where that framework starts.
So that's where we get some of these statements. They complete me. And sometimes it's completing you. Not necessarily the right way. Rewinding a little bit. So I am codependent. I've discovered and I've received awareness. I'm a codependent. How do I change that? Or is there even an assessment or where I can tell if I'm codependent? So if I were to sit down and try to see, okay, am I codependent? What am I looking for to see if I am codependent? If I discover I'm codependent, what next? What do I do, Dr. Liz? How do I backtrack and reverse all of that?
So the first part of this is awareness. So to your point, there has to be this self-assessment. There has to be self-reflection to check in on. Some really common traits would be, am I taking care of everyone else? Am I constantly putting myself last? Do I have a hard time telling people no? Do I have a hard time setting boundaries? Am I a perfectionist? Am I a people pleaser? These are some of the primary things that we start asking ourselves when we're assessing for this. There are also assessments online, and there's also Pia Melody is often the resource, PIA Melody, that I send a lot of my clients. There's a couple books, Facing Love Addiction and Facing Codependence, she really provides a lot of information in there. But a common feedback that I get when my client comes back to session after reading that is, okay, I understand it. Yes, I can identify I'm certainly codependent, but now what? Right. And so that is where we then seek help and really professional help of somebody who can help you identify where did these behaviors start and how can we healthily and appropriately start to change them.
So this is when, if you're in Arizona, you'd go and find Evolve Counseling and see a professional that can help you. Is it something that I can work on my own and really succeed in getting myself out of that codependency mode?
I do believe it is work that people can do on their own. As far as, you know, how far that will take you, and that's going to be very individual to each person. But PMLity also has workbooks. You can also just Google workbooks on Amazon. And so there are multiple things that you can be doing to really, even on your own, to be checking in on, you know, where is this coming from, having an awareness of when it shows up, and then getting ideas on how to start learning to say no and start setting boundaries. Those are the key. That is like the foundation of where I start with my clients when we're working on codependency. How do we say no, and how do we set appropriate boundaries?
Right. So it's really mainly about how you set healthy boundaries. So that's basically starting somewhere. I always think of setting boundaries, listening to your five senses. If you smell something and it stinks, you close your nose. If you look at something and you don't like it, you close your eyes. So that's a cue for setting healthy boundaries. So if you figure out these are all the things that make you feel some type of way, it means that you need to say no. Now you're codependent and you are in a relationship with a narcissist. Can that relationship work?
Yes. It can.
Okay, talk to me.
Yes. This is something I talk about so frequently because all of the social media is blowing up narcissism right now. I'm sure that you have seen that.
Right.
It is such a buzzword. It is such a hot topic. And the individuals with the narcissistic tendencies are getting such a bad rap in this. And they are really becoming so villainized. It's really important to know that narcissism, as well as codependency, is on a spectrum. Okay, so we can have narcissistic or codependent tendencies, and then we can be full-blown diagnosable. There is a spectrum. And so it can work if both individual is aware of their behaviors, is aware of where these behaviors are coming from, and if they have a willingness to do better. If they have a willingness to check themselves during conflict, to check themselves when they're feeling triggered, and to recognize this is my codependent traits coming up, or these are my narcissistic traits coming up, this is not healthy, this is not adaptive to this current situation. And so when somebody has a willingness to do that,
then the sky's the limit.
Then it can work.
So self-awareness is a key part of that. Now, we're talking of some things that are being programmed probably for years and years now. Are we talking trauma here? That's why people tend to be codependent or narcissist, or that's something totally different? Or is trauma involved in any of this?
I would say so. And I would say that what we would call it attachment trauma. So these interactions with their caregivers, likely the child was not provided with this warm and responsive parenting. And so because of that, they had to start to develop these other traits. And so, yes, we can call that a form of trauma because the child is not, and PMLity references in her book, she considers trauma anytime that a child is not cared for in a way that they should be, in a way that is nurturing and kind and warm, that could be translated as a traumatic experience.
Also, any child from your family of origin, if you didn't receive the basic needs, that programs you a particular way so that when you show up in relationships at a later stage, it becomes your adult relationship become affected. We're talking millennials. I'm a millennial, you're millennial. Mm-hmm. When it comes to this idea of codependency and narcissism, why do you think that it is now being magnified? I find it much more so within millennials. This word narcissism is blowing up. Mm-hmm. The conversations that I have, I hear it more around millennials. Mm-hmm. Gen Z maybe, Gen X, yes, but millennials seem to be talking about it more and more. Where is this coming from? Why is this now blowing up right now? Did we not know about this?
Mm. So I think that part of it is that it somehow became very trendy and it's gone from there. I think that part of that was because he or she is such a narcissist, became such an easy jab at our exes. And so I think that that's where it started. But I also think that this increase in research around the dynamic, there's a book, The Human Magnet Syndrome. Rosenberg is the author, and he talks about this pull between the codependent and the narcissist. And that is not that old of a book. So I think, you know, within the last maybe 15 years or so that this has started to really, the books on codependency started way back, I mean, 70s, 80s, they started to get rolling out, but it's just become something that people are latching onto. And I think also maybe considering how much social media has blown up a lot of mental health.
Right, exposure to things.
Yeah, especially for millennials, that this has become a topic we've all become aware of. And so now we're dispersing it through that source.
So we're talking about a little bit more. I've always had conversations, not always absolute. I've had some conversation, and for some reason, it seems to come out that men are tagged as narcissists.
Yeah.
Is that a true statement? Is this thing gender, or how is it true to that? Or do we find more men that are narcissists? And more often, the idea of narcissist gets to be lumped together with men who abuse women, sexual abuse. It may not necessarily be physically or anything like that, who take advantage of women, such a narcissist. And I hear women say more of that term than I hear men say more of that term. I would hear more of women call other women narcissists, but I never hear men say that girl is a narcissist. What's going on there?
Yeah, there are gender roles that make it more common for the male to have narcissistic tendencies and for the female to have codependent tendencies. And you think about that in terms of traditional gender roles, where the female has been traditionally the caretaker and the one who, you know, is taking care of the family and all of those things. So even when you think childhood, often we see like the oldest daughter, you know, we hear these stories a lot. She was responsible for the youngest siblings, or she was responsible for cooking. Or so there are some gender roles that are truly make it more common, one or the other. However, I make it very clear that either gender has the capability for either or for both. You asked a question earlier about, can you be codependent and narcissist, or a narcissist with codependent? Yes, you can absolutely be both. And
oh, you can be both.
Yes. Yep. And I make sure that that's very clear. And because some of these similarities are both struggle with boundaries. Violating or allowing others to violate. They struggle with just wanting acceptance, approval, and they also both struggle with being controlling. And so there are multiple overlapping behaviors and the ability to be both.
So how do you find love as a codependent and not... You know, so there's a confusion that happens out there that between duty and love. And I find that when we talk about the two, some people feel like it's my duty to do this. It's my duty to do this. And the lines become blurred in between. Do you love this individual, or are you doing this out of duty? Well, I have to do this because I'm a wife. I have to do this because I'm the girlfriend. I have to do this because I'm a boyfriend. So how do we navigate that and being able to really find love and experience love as a codependent?
That's a great question. I take it back to, what is your motivation for doing what you're doing? And so I do believe that when we love somebody and when we're in relationship with somebody, we do things that we don't always want to do, because we want to demonstrate our love and we want to demonstrate care, and we want that person to know they're important to us. And so there are times when that overlap is appropriate, because that's just what happens in relationships. But a self-assessment that can be really helpful is, what is the percentage of this happening? How often are you putting yourself in an uncomfortable position or having the sense of dread or doing these things that you hate doing. And so how often are you just stopping there with that assessment, but then also checking in on, is this a 50-50 with you and your partner? Is your partner doing just as frequently these things that maybe they don't love to do so that you can feel seen and heard and esteemed and all those things? Or is there one person or the other that is doing most of the giving while the other is doing most of the taking? And I think that that's a really good place to start of, is this healthy? Is this because I love this person? Or is this my programming of, it's my job to take care of this person?
I like the two words that you use, uncomfortable or dread. If you find yourself being in a position whereby you're always feeling uncomfortable or dreading doing certain activities or going to certain places or doing certain activities with your partner, then you might need to check that, because that may be duty as opposed to love. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that somebody may be thinking and listening out there thinking, okay, now that I found out that I'm a codependent and or I'm a narcissist, I need to change this right now. How do I disabuse myself of that notion of right now? Or how do I work towards that without having to feel the pressure?
So first and foremost, right now is not a thing. Also, you're likely going to carry these traits throughout your lifespan. That programming that takes place early on really does create, it really is your template. Now, can we adjust the behaviors? Can we become more healthy, more appropriate, more boundaried? Absolutely. But there does have to be this ongoing awareness of, this is my tendency to revert back to either codependent behaviors or narcissistic behaviors. And so to start to change that process is, first, be realistic with your expectations. You're not going to be fully out of whatever it is that you're experiencing. And also, it's going to be a process, because to your earlier point, when you talked about these traits being reaffirmed over the lifespan, that's exactly what happens, is they're developed early on, but then to your point, they continue to be strengthened and reaffirmed and further conditioned all the way through adulthood. And so we're thinking, you know, especially for millennials, so 30, 35 years of doing things one way,
right?
We can't expect that by next week we're doing things a different way. So have grace for yourself.
It's interesting, because you find couples that start dating at 29 and 30 and they move in together, and all of a sudden they want the other person to change. This person has lived a particular way for the past 29 years,
yes,
or 30 years. It's not possible for them to change that way. And we're really dealing with neurons that wire together, fire together,
yep,
and which comes from when the baby is developing and the brain is trying to figure out itself. When 3 years old, 4 years old, and you're just carrying on that, it's not possible for you to be able to change that immediately, just like that. I wonder when a couple is at that juncture whereby they feel their relationship is not working because one feels the other person is a narcissist and the other person is not a narcissist. Mm-hmm. And this person has tendencies that are unbearable. Maybe they've been looking up literature. Maybe one of their friends told them, hey, your boyfriend is a narcissist or your partner is a narcissist. And they're contemplating on, okay, you know what? I got to run. But as you were saying, well, a person can be a narcissist and they can actually function in a normal way. What does the other person who is not a narcissist, who is not a codependent, needs to know in order to live with the narcissist and make it work?
So the first part of that would be bringing this to your partner's attention, that these particular behaviors are hurtful to you and they make it really hard for you to feel safe in that relationship. And that is that individual's first responsibility, is to communicate, what are these specific behaviors? I never suggest sitting down and saying, you are such a narcissist, figure it out. That is not helpful. That is not productive. But rather, I don't feel seen. I don't feel heard. When I say these things to you and this is how you respond, that's hurtful. Giving these specific behaviors. that an other individual with the narcissistic tendencies has a choice in that moment to either receive what their partner is saying and choose to either seek out the necessary help or the books or the literature for themselves to start making changes, or they have the choice to say, this is who I am, take it or leave it. That then puts this choice back in the other person's hands, okay? So the person bringing it to their attention. And I talk about in almost every session, acceptance or change. That person can accept, this is just who my partner is, and I need to figure it out, narcissistic tendencies and all. Or I can choose, this is no longer working for me, this doesn't feel safe, this is no longer meeting my needs, and I can move on. But this person with the codependent tendencies does not have the ability to change the person with the narcissistic tendencies. So I'm just going to say it right now. Save yourself time. Don't even try.
We have this idea of fixing each other in relationships. Yes. I see couples, they say, I brought him a book. I told them to watch this video. They're trying to fix each other. Yes. And they can either choose to accept or change, either way or the other. And that can be helpful for any individual out there who's listening, wondering, I've tried everything. They don't seem to be changing. It's not your responsibility to change the other person. Stop putting the pressure on yourself.
Absolutely.
Because it just won't work. And I can also see it working in the same way with a codependent. If a partner is not a narcissist and they're dating or in a relationship with somebody who is codependent, mm-hmm. it can feel overwhelming. Like, okay, when do you take time for yourself? You're always tired. And I would assume if somebody is a codependent, they're not giving enough time into their relationship because they're always busy and doing other stuff, but not stuff in the relationship. So how does that one who is feeling left out be a part of the journey of building things together? Because it's easy sometimes to say, you need to think about this, you need to work on this. But I found that in working with couples, when you tag team, even if you're the one who's on the right, but you desire growth and move together, there's something that's different. So how do you partner in changing or growing together in a codependent? I'm assuming it could apply with a narcissist too.
Yeah, and a little bit to the contrary in regard to being in a relationship with a codependent, they often are overly involved in the relationship. So they're doing all these other things, but they are overly almost obsessed with the other individual in the relationship. And so you are correct that it is very overwhelming to be in relationship with a codependent because of the fact that it feels so suffocating. It is like they constantly want your time, your attention. They want to do everything for you, take care of you, which likely means they're trying to control you, you know, all of those things. And so that can be really overwhelming. And so the same thing would be true of the same conversation that you would have with this individual with the narcissistic tendencies. You would have the same with the codependent. You would sit down, you would express, these are the specific behaviors that are really hard for me to be in relationship with you. Can we figure out a way to start to change together so that we can both feel healthy and safe and supported in this dynamic?
Okay. So if you are codependent, it also means, because you're a perfectionist in some regards, so you want to do everything, you want to plan everything, that can cause some love burnout, and the other person can feel overwhelmed. And it may be that the other individual has the avoidant type style of relationship whereby they need to take some time away and breathe. And the other person's like, why did you go without me? I wanted to be with you. Well, are you cheating on me? What's happening? And that can cause a little bit of some conflict in the relationship, I'm assuming.
That's exactly right. You just described the anxious attachment style versus the avoidant attachment style. And that is very common that we see the anxious attachment style show up in codependency and the avoidant with narcissists. And you're exactly right that it can be very overwhelming when the avoidant needs both time together, but time apart. And the person with the anxious attachment, as you're saying, is constantly like, gimme, 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 and then throws out the, well, it must be because you're cheating on me, which is a whole other component.
That's a different story altogether.
Yes. And so in those situations, that is really checking in on what is your attachment, how is it impacting your relationships, and that's probably a podcast for a whole different day for you and I.
you mentioned a little bit of relational programming. Tell me a little bit more about, just briefly, about relational programming. What is that?
So that is when it is these interactions that we have with our caregivers or with our siblings or whatever that happens early on. It's really with our family, our immediate family, and what those interactions are like. So how we're treated teaches us how to treat others. And so all of that programming takes place early on, which then, as we were talking about, we then carry that into our adult relationships.
So this is where we learned how to receive love and give love, how we learn self-worth, how we learn respect, how we learn how to manage money or many of those things. So that's what really relational programs. So you have been programmed in a particular way, mm-hmm. and you carry that all throughout your relationships and into your committed adult relationships.
Right.
And this is what then leads to all these other codependency tendencies and narcissist tendencies.
Exactly. Because another primary component of that is it's how we learn to get our needs met. So, or if we're even worthy to have our needs met. And so that is part of the relational programming. And then that is one of the primary components that is carried into adult relationships, is how we were taught if we were shamed for having needs and how we learned how to get those needs met.
Shame for having those needs. And this is probably the reason why somebody who may be in an abusive relationship, male or female or whichever the case, they stay in there because they have been programmed to say that, hey, this is normal or this will pass. You hear statements, people say like, well, he or she is going to change. I love them. They'll change. That's relational programming, if I'm getting that right. That may be at work there.
Yep. Either they'll change or it's not that bad, but when it's good, it's good. We hear there's a whole bunch of cliches that we hear that are tied into relational programming because it's what I call their uncomfortable comfort zone. So they recognize this doesn't feel good, but it's also familiar and it's what they know. So it's what they continue to seek out.
And that keeps on being a cycle. So you move from that relationship. If you move to the next relationship, you're programmed to be attracted to a certain, and you keep on getting into these relationships over and
over. Until you reprogram. And that is what I sit with my clients and talk about. It's exactly what I talk about. Until you work to reprogram this attachment style or reprogram the way that you do relationships, you will continue to seek out the same relationship, just in a different body every single time.
Dr. Liz, let's end it there. Give me some tips or some few tips here on where do you begin with reprogramming?
So the first and foremost is the self-awareness. So you have to have an awareness of what behaviors are taking place and where are they coming from. How are they showing up and impacting relationships? What are they influencing in your life? And then the next step is, what can you change? So what is within your control to change? What are some of your behaviors that you can recognize are maladaptive and you can start to modify them? Seeking professional help is a great thing to do as well. And then also seeking out some of these books, Facing Codependence, Codependent No More, The Human Magnet Syndrome, seeking out resources that can help you recognize what's going on and give you ideas on how to start changing these behaviors and changing your belief systems around what is healthy and appropriate and what is not.
I mean, we can go on and on and talking about this topic. As you mentioned, maybe on that there's about three podcast topics that we spoke about in there.
Yeah.
Dr. Liz, thank you so much for joining me. I know you're doing a whole lot of stuff. You own your practice. When can people find more information about you? Where can they link up with you?
So our website is evolvecounselingaz.com. And then I'm also very active on Instagram @evolvecounselingaz.
At Evolve Counseling AZ. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Dr. Liz. As always, if you want to link up with the podcast, don't forget to go to Relationship Factor. Check out the stuff that we have on there. And always, if you like the podcast, why don't you go ahead and give us a 5-star rating, share and follow it. Another episode of Relationship Factor. It's a wrap. Thank you, Dr. Liz.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.